When Hashem offers Moshe Rabbeinu the job to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, he says, "Why me? This will be just a temporary relief. Why don't you send Moshiach?" And based on that, the Rebbe says there must be a very powerful intrinsic connection between Moshe and the redemption he brought about, and Moshiach and the redemption he will bring about. Al haposuk shlach no biatishlach, on the pasuk that says, Moshe speaking to Hashem, shlach no, rather send, please send the one you wish to send in the future. He's a bemedrash. The medrash says, and it's pretty well known, Om Moshe lefon of ribbono shel olam, shlach no biatishlach, biad Moshiach shehu osid ligalos. That Moshe said to Hashem, rather send the one you plan to send in the future, namely Moshiach, who in the future will still be revealed. As we know from the story, Hashem did not accede to Moshe's request. He did not send Moshiach at that point in time. And instead, he sent Moshe specifically for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Moshiach is reserved for the future. So, based on the Medrash, there's an obvious connection that must exist between Moshe and Moshiach. Hashem mishum ze bikash Moshe shashlichus begulosin shabnei somi mitzayim shuut lo lo of timaser biyad Moshiach. Obviously, the logic that prompted Moshe Rabbeinu to say, why send me? Send Moshiach indicates that Moshe and Moshiach have a very strong intrinsic connection, which is why it was logical to suggest maybe Moshiach is better suited at this point in time. Except for the fact that Hashem said, yes, Moshe has a role to play in the redemption out of Egypt, and Moshiach will have a future role to play to take the Jewish people out of the final Golus. But the point is that there has to be an association and connection between the two of them. So the fact that Moshe as a person and Moshiach as a person have a connection would be the reason why their roles are similar. Though in fact, it's the same role. The role is to redeem Jewish people, just in different circumstances. Moshiach in the future, Moshe in the past. So to understand the connection between Moshe and Moshiach, moving up in Maimon Azal, Moshe hu goel rishon, hu goel achron, as the Medrash says, Moshe is the original redeemer, and Moshe is the eventual redeemer. Now there's a practical question about that, which the Rebbe will resolve very easily, but the point is that there is an intrinsic connection between the two individuals, what they represent, and of course the roles that they'll play. So vehine eina pirush Moshe gufa ve'atzmoi yeh ha'goel ha'achren sharu Moshe m'shevet Levi Moshiach yamin be'beis David m'shevet Yehuda. It's obvious that when we say that Moshe is the goel acharon, the eventual redeemer, we don't mean that literally, because Moshe famously is a Levi, and Moshiach has to come from the tribe of Yehuda. So what do we mean then when we say that Moshe is also goel acharon, the eventual redeemer? And apirush Moshe shehu goel rishon. So rather what we want to say, and this will be the real thrust of this sicha, what we want to say is Moshe hu goyel rishon. Moshe is the original redeemer who took the Jewish people out of Egypt, and through whom it became possible that there would be a goyel acharon, an eventual redeemer, Moshiach. In other words, Moshe gives the koyach. Not only does he start the process, but he empowers the process of Moshiach coming. And that's what we want to understand. What's that relationship and connection? Vehabir. So the explanation is Atayra Hireshis Vika Mailosa Shalom Melech HaMashiach Hoyga B'Tayra. So in order to understand the correlation between Moshe and Moshiach, let's understand that the Rambam makes it very clear that the core value, the core characteristic of Moshiach will be his immense greatness in Torah. Hoyga B'Tayra. He'll be absolutely fluent in Torah. Vahainu, which implies Shekoicha So if Moshiach's primary characteristic is his incredible fluency and knowledge of Torah, and that's what empowers him to take the Jewish people out of Golus, you understand Torah obviously comes from Moshe. In fact, to the extent that the Torah is called Toras Moshe. And not only is Moshiach going to be an absolute leader in Torah learning, but one of the primary ways that we get to bring Moshiach is by our Torah learning, which is something we'll explain in greater detail through the course of the Sicha. So the first natural and obvious connection between Moshe and Moshiach is that they both have this very deep relationship with Torah. The Shaychus Pinimi Zoy, Shebein Moshiach Moshe Meremezes Gambozer, Shebias Moshiach Nikreis Yovoy Shiloy. So a big part of helping us to understand the depth of connection between Moshe and Moshiach through their respective connection to Torah is going to be illustrated by the expression Yavoi Shiloi, the expression that's used to refer to the time of Moshiach, Yavoi Shiloi, that Moshiach will come. So in those words, Yavoi Shiloi, we're going to see a big hint into the connection between Moshe and Moshiach. She Yavoi Shiloi is begimatu Moshiach. First hint is that we're told that those words, Yavoi Shiloi, have the same gematria value as the word Moshiach. That's what the Baal HaTorim says on that pasuk. Then, v'shiloi b'gematria Moshe. Without the word Yavoi, just the word Shiloi on its own, the Zohar tells us, has the same gematria as Moshe. Ah, so there's already a correlation. Shiloi has the gematria of Moshe. Yavoi Shiloi has the gematria of Moshiach. That shows a connection, but the connection goes beyond that. V'shiloi b'gematria Moshe, hayna zeh shekvar yeshna kodim l'yavoi hakeach, al biyosa shemashiach, hu inyone shel Moshe. So what do you have? You have Shiloi. That's the potential state of Moshiach. The potential that Moshiach exists. That is the gematria of Moshe telling you that Moshe is the one who created the potential for Moshiach to exist. Yavoi Shiloi, that's when Moshiach comes in practice, in real time. That's the Giloi, the revelation of Moshiach. So that shows you very clearly that Moshe Rabbeinu and Moshiach are indelibly connected, and specifically that Moshe starts the process. He is the Shiloi, so to speak, out of sight, and Moshiach is the Yavoi Shiloi when Moshiach comes to the fore. Now it goes beyond that too. V'hinu yudu asichas chak meichad mor, shiyavoi Shiloi gematria echod, o Moshe b'tzeref echod, bin gematria Moshiach. So now the Friedrich Rebbe adds another dimension to this, that the word Yavoi, which has the gematria of 13, which is the gematria of Echad. So that tells you that you've got Moshe, which is the gematria of Shiloi, plus Yavoi, which is the gematria of Echad, that equals Moshiach. In other words, Moshe, which is the concept of Torah, together with the concept of Echad, that will bring Moshiach. V'hainu, which means, Shebiyasa shel Moshiach befeal Yavoi, yiyah lidei havoide ba'oifen shel Echad. That tells us, how do we bring Moshiach? So the seed for Moshiach was planted already by Moshe, which is the gematria of Shiloi. So the power, the potential to bring Moshiach is already there. How do we bring that potential into reality? Through Yavoi, which is the gematria of Echad, which means doing our Avoida in a way of Echad, which has a dual meaning. Echad, obviously, the unity of the Jewish people, and also creating a sense of Echad in the world, as we'll discuss. So, v'hakoyach levatzei avoyda zoi niten lonu mimoyshe, our capacity, our possibility of achieving this, of being able to unite and being able to bring the world to a state of achdus, of oneness, that was given to us by Moshe. V'lochem Moshe, nesinas hakoyach al avoyda zoi betzirif echad, avoyda atzmo b'gimach Moshiach. So you take Moshe, who is the source, the power to be able to achieve this, plus Yavoi, which is the actual avoyda, put them together, you get Moshiach. Okay, let's understand what this all means, because it's nice and it's wordplay and it's gematrius and it all kind of links together, but what does it actually mean? Vabir Bozeth's explanation is Amar Azal Oilam Al Miluoi Nivra. So Chazal tell us that the world was actually created in a complete state. The original form of the world was as it was intended. And then things went awry. And Ishakasha Nivra Oilam Aikolin Yonah Bishle Musa. The beginning of the creation of the world, things were, so to speak, perfect. But then there was a chet etzadas. There was the so-called misstep. The word sin is maybe a bit radical, but there was the chet. There was the lack of dedication that Adam and Chava exhibited by eating from the tree of knowledge, and there was an intimate connection created between Chava and the snake, through which that negative energy, that predisposition to do what was wrong, became part of the nature of people. Up until that point in time, the negative energy was external to the person. It was a snake, something that came with a very clear warning label. But from the Chet Eitz Hadas, it became part of us, that we have inclination to do what is wrong. And therefore, Adam was demoted in his spiritual stature, and the whole world was demoted in its spiritual stature. Adazman the Matan Torah she'oz nis'alu miridosan kisol she'amda la Sinai poskozu amosan. Until the time of the giving of the Torah, then the world was elevated again, the Jewish people were elevated again, and that inclination to negative was removed from us again at the point of standing at the Har Sinai. Unfortunately, it didn't last. Unfortunately, the Jewish people also engaged with something which was against what Hashem wanted, and they made the golden calf, through which they reintroduced the inclination to negativity and the natural toxicity of Averis into the bloodstream of the Jewish person. And that's the state of the world until today, until Mashiach comes, when Mashiach will expunge all negativity and impurity from the world completely, at which point not only will the negative energies and the toxicity of bad behavior be removed from our personal systems, but it will be totally removed from the world. And the world will be refined and will be clarified and be elevated to the ultimate. So it's kind of a roller coaster. The world starts at a position that is pristine. It falls through the choices of Adam and Chava. It is elevated again at the time of Matan Torah, falls through the Egel HaZahav, and is still in a depressed state until Mashiach comes, when it will rise and never fall again. Ve'hine yodua. Now, it's all very well to say that there's this kind of up and down experience of the world, but what we need to analyze is why. Why does Hashem allow those kinds of yiridus to happen? So one principle that we speak about a lot in Hasidus is Yerida Tzorich Aliyahi, that every Yerida, every descent, every backpedaling is purely for the purpose of rising higher afterwards. And that's something we have to ingrain into ourselves. Every Yerida is solely for the purpose of an Aliyah that will be even greater to follow. That means, that means that any time that there is some kind of a slump, it's only that we should have an aliyah, meaning, so what's obvious then is that the subsequent aliyah must take us to a position that is greater and higher than the pristine state we enjoyed before the fall. So we're not looking to reclaim what we had. We're looking that every Yerida gives us the opportunity to exceed what we had, to transcend what we had. Umuvan mize, shemadrega soalia alidei matan Torah, shebo'o lachrei ha-yerida alidei chet eitz hadas, yesh bo yisran al dargas ho'iloi shekoydem chet eitz hadas. So following that same logic, the transcendence, the elevation of the Jewish people and of the world by virtue of Hashem giving us the Torah, means that at that point in time, we went to a higher level than we were in the pristine state of Gan Eden before they ate from the Eitz Hadas. And therefore, goes without saying, how much more so the Aliyah that's going to happen when Mashiach comes is going to be exponentially greater than the Aliyah of Matan Torah, which was exponentially higher than the state of the world before the Eitz Hadas. That's an important principle for us to appreciate. The advantage that's going to exist in the time of Mashiach will be twofold. The degree of infinite godliness that is revealed will be exponentially more, and the elevation of us and the world around us will be exponentially higher. So not only does more holiness enter the world, but the world is lifted in a totally unprecedented fashion. Like we're going to see about the story of Matan Torah, although you'll see that there's quite a significant difference. Now, before the Torah was given, the concept of fulfilling mitzvahs already existed. Like the Rambam says in Hilchis Melachim, so the Rambam says that the concept of doing mitzvahs already existed from the beginning of time, because Adam Arishon was given six mitzvahs. Noach was then given the prohibition against Eivir min Achai to eat the limb of a living animal. That became the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Avraham Avinu was then told to do a bris, and he instituted davening in the form of Shachris, the morning service. Yitzchak introduced the concept of tithing, of giving Meiser, and he introduced Mincha service. And Yaakov introduced the prohibition against the Gidah Nasha eating the sciatic nerve, and he introduced the Meiriv service. In other words, the idea of fulfilling mitzvahs and connecting to Hashem through the fulfillment of those mitzvahs precedes the giving of the Torah. And the Chazal tell us that, in fact, besides those mitzvahs that are specified by the Rambam, actually our avos, our patriarchs, fulfilled all of the Torah, even rabbinic mitzvahs, before they were instructed. Im kol zeh, but it goes without saying, nobody would debate this, that hari dafka mematan Torah nischadish loyrak ili rav atos v'skeach b'kima mitzvahs atzmon, elagam oyin duvanu v'charto b'chiras HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'bnei Yisrael abom atzmus nisborch shalamayna mikol or v'gilash nisgal akoyin mematan Torah. So everybody will acknowledge that as dedicated as they were and as much as they had mitzvahs to fulfill even before the Torah was given, at the time of Matan Torah two incredibly big things happened. Firstly, we were instructed. Up until that point in time, they essentially volunteered to do Torah mitzvahs. Now we were instructed to do Torah mitzvahs, and of course, more detail and information was added. And even more importantly than that, that's where Hashem chose us to become a unique nation on earth, His chosen people. So that's the difference in terms of what was brought into the world. What was brought into the world at the time of the giving of the Torah was the full version of the Torah and the unique connection that Hashem chose us as His people. But we also see that we and the world were also impacted and elevated through the experience. So yes, we've already noted that after Matan Torah, after the temporary suspension of the inclination to evil, we then messed up and made the golden calf, and so was reintroduced into our lives. Nevertheless, the toxicity of that Yetzer Hara, that Zuama, that predisposition to bad, was not as intense as it had been before the Torah was given. In other words, the Torah kind of immunizes us to a certain extent against certain really blatant, inappropriate spiritual behaviors. As we've already said, every Yerida takes you to a higher place than you were before the Yerida. So before the Chet Tzadas, there was this protection against toxic spiritual behavior. Then the Chet Tzadas dragged people and the world really low into a terrible place. After the giving of the Torah, the impact of the Torah, although it didn't totally immunize us, and we still have inclination to bad, however, it touched us in a deeper fashion than Adam and Chava were before they ate from the tree of knowledge. It means to say that somewhere deep within ourselves, we have a connection to Torah, to Hashem, to appropriate behavior that protects us from going completely rogue. That's how it was with the time of the giving of the Torah, that new elements were introduced to the world, more holiness, a unique relationship with Hashem, and a higher state of our own immunization against what's inappropriate. So if that's what happened at the time of the giving of the Torah, you can imagine the time of Mashiach, where Mashiach is going to teach Torah, and that doesn't just mean to teach the existing information, but radically new perspectives of Torah that Mashiach will introduce to us. So that's going to affect us. The Torah of Mashiach is going to be so different and so deep compared to what we've known up until this point in time that it's kind of like the Torah being given, even though we know Matan Torah will never happen again. But the new depth and the new perspective and the new richness of Torah that Mashiach will introduce to us, and as we explain in Chassidus, that it introduced to us in such a way of re'iyah that it won't be information we know in our minds, it will be information that is in 3D, clear relief for us, will be absolutely compelling. So that's going to affect us, obviously, in a very profound way. The kind of Torah that we'll be exposed to in the time of Mashiach will have a great advantage even over what happened at Matan Torah. And just like in the way that the world changed and we changed at the time of the giving of the Torah was in two ways. What was introduced into the world and how we were elevated. Likewise, in the time of Mashiach, you're going to see two different influences of the great perspective of the Torah, so Shal Mashiach, on us. Begiloi ha'ilikos mila mila over madrigosa shel bnei yisrael v'ha'olam. So we're going to see that there's a different degree of revelation from above downwards, and a different degree of elevation of us and the world upwards. So mevur b'tanya, to understand what that means. In Tanya, it explains she'ima yosha gilo ha'ilikos ha'ib matan teira. We all know that one of the big things that changed the experience and was so unique about being at Matan Torah is that they saw what is normally heard. Now, we always think that that's just referring to the thunder and lightning, that they saw the thunder and they heard the lightning. But on a deeper level, the Alter Rebbe explains what it means is that they saw what you normally cannot see. They saw godliness for real with their own eyes. Not something you read about in a book or listen to in a shiur or get inspired by, but they actually saw it in the same kind of compelling way that you see that it's light outside during the day. Unfortunately, though, says the Alter Rebbe, that was only a foretaste of what was to come. And it was temporary, by the way. Whatever degree of revelation of godliness occurred at Matan Torah, and there was an incredible revelation to the point that their bodies were flung 12 kilometers back and their souls flew out of their bodies and the whole world was impacted, that is nothing compared to the great revelation that is going to happen at the time of Mashiach. Every single living thing will see godliness in the most real and clear way. So that's the first element, we said, is that there's revelation from on high. So the revelation from on high at the time of Mashiach is exponentially more than the revelation from on high that happened at the time of the giving of the Torah. The second big distinction is going to be not temporary suspension of zuama, of this inclination to evil, as happened at the time of the giving of the Torah. The promise of the time of Moshiach is that Hashem will completely eradicate the spirit of evil from the world, the spirit of impurity from the world, death from the world. It's gone, it's over, it will never recur. He has the big distinction, right? At the time of the giving of the Torah, it's just that temporarily their inclination to negative was suspended. When something is suspended, that always implies that it could return, and it did. At the time of the golden calf, it did return. Their obsession with negativity came back. Why? So what happened at the time of the giving of the Torah? There was such an overwhelming sense of godliness. There was such a superimposition of divine reality onto the physical world that everybody just was blown away by it. But then it ended. When they finished blowing the shofar, then the divine energy receded and our conscious reality returned and we were again fragile and vulnerable and capable of doing what was wrong as we did. And that's not going to happen when Moshiach comes. There's a fundamental difference that's going to happen in the time of Moshiach. The time of the giving of the Torah, the world was as it was, and then Hashem superimposed such a compelling sense of godliness, dangling a mountain over their head, as the metaphor goes in the Gemara, that everybody just fell into line and conformed and were dedicated and did exactly what Hashem wanted. But they hadn't changed internally. So as soon as the great inspiration ended, the shir was over, the retreat ended, everybody went back home, they got back into their old behaviors. Whereas when Mashiach comes, what's going to change is not that Hashem will superimpose godliness onto the world. It's that the world itself will absorb awareness of godliness, that the world itself, through its own efforts, or essentially through our efforts, will become so at home with godliness that that becomes its reality. It's no longer superimposed. It's no longer an external powerful influence. It is me. It's my reality. If it becomes my reality, then I'll never go back to the old reality that was misguided. והנה מזה אשר דווקא לאחרי הירידה היו עליה אנליס ביוסי מובן, אשר הירידה אינה אלא הכונו מוכרחס להועליה הבא אחריה. Now, this is a principle we speak about a lot in Chassidus, and the principle says, if yirida tzorich aliyah, if the whole purpose of the descent is solely to create the opportunity for an ascent, and not a reclaiming of what used to be before the descent, you know, like during the coronavirus, and everybody keeps saying, halavai, if only the world would go back to how it was. That's not a Jewish attitude. We don't go back to how it was. We now say, we've been through this incredible slump. What needs to follow is something radically greater than whatever was. If that is the concept, that means the Yerida itself, the descent, this is an incredibly important principle in Torah, in Chassidus particularly, the Yerida is not a state after which Aliyah follows. It is the state of creation and facilitation of the Aliyah. Meaning to say the Yerida is not real. The Yerida is to create the opportunity. It's the tension in the spring, which is why things fly forward afterwards. It's pulling back on the bow so that the arrow can fly. It's not opposed to the Aliyah. It's not that I break down a wall in my house because later I want to renovate. This is the renovation. The Yerida is a facilitator and part of the process of the Aliyah. The fall is what made me a greater, stronger, more insightful person. For obvious reasons, it's only in the Yerida state, in the collapsed state, that we are able to do the work, show the commitment to Hashem, which will cause the Aliyah rebound state. Were there no Yerida, we would never find these resources within ourselves and show this dedication, so we would never create that Aliyah. Okamoy, Shaliyah the Matan Torah Ba Aliyachon the Ma'ase Oves V'Achar Kachabir V'Zikuch Dichura Barz V'Mitzrayim Sheimesh Sheichinu Es Mreisav Olim Shichul Kabel Agili the Matan Torah. You see this practically in the story of Matan Torah. How did we get to Matan Torah? Well, first you had to have the hard work of our patriarchs and matriarchs through very trying and difficult circumstances, famines and conflict and issues within their families, and then we had the Jewish people go through the iron cast iron reality of Egypt, the slavery of Egypt, and all of that was for what purpose? Not because Hashem wanted us to be slaves, God forbid. Not because Hashem wanted us to suffer, God forbid, but because that was the forging in fire of the possibility for Matan Torah. So as it was then, it's through our efforts now in the Golus state, where it's difficult and godliness is obscured and there are so many challenges and so much cynicism and so much opposition. Now now is the time we create Mashiach. We don't wait for Mashiach, we create Mashiach. We're not looking forward to the Geula, we are designing the Geula currently. Why? Because the Geula is intended to be that the world itself is a conduit for godliness. Therefore, we have to work within the world itself, in its raw and distracted state, in order for Geula to happen. If the world was relieved of its issues, we would not be making the world itself connected to Hashem. It's definitely because it's a dark world with its challenges and with its issues, and we work in that framework and succeed, that allows us to make the world as it is, the keli, the vessel to receive the great, incredible revelation of Mashiach. Just to better understand this concept, we'll revisit something that's a very well-known question. How come our greatest declaration of faith appears not to actually declare that faith? Shema Yisrael, Hashem is Echad. Hashem is one. So what's the famous question? Surely it would have been more appropriate if this is a statement of absolute faith. In the unique oneness of Hashem, we should have said Hashem Yochid. Hashem is unique. Hashem is the only. Because when you use the word echad, echad does not emphasize uniqueness. Echad is one. One potentially could be part of a number line. One could allow the possibility of two. That's why in the morning when we say Adon Olam, what do we say? That we said, Yesh Echad V'Ein Sheni. Right? That Hashem is one and not two. Because the word one does not naturally exclude the possibility of two. Whereas the word yachid is absolutely crystal clear that there cannot be any other. So why don't we say Hashem yachid? The explanation that is given in various places in Chassidus is that's exactly the point. We dafka want to emphasize Hashem's unity in a framework called Echad, not in the pristine framework called Yochid. What does that mean? To illustrate that Hashem truly is one is not achieved by throwing out any possibility of opposition. Whereas dafka, when there exists a world, and the world potentially could give the impression, as it does, that it's independent, that it doesn't need God, there's nature, and there is science, and who needs God? And then if it's possible within that framework, through the world itself, to illustrate that actually it's only Hashem who exists, that's Achdus. That's real. That is true oneness of Hashem. The component of existence that should by its nature reject Hashem actually proclaims Hashem. Oh, that's an achievement. That's the whole purpose of Hashem Echad. We want to say there is a world with all of its apparent distraction and its apparent independence that proclaims godliness, and therefore Hashem is truly one. As we very well know, this is alluded to in the actual letters of the word Echad. Whereas Aleph is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Aluf Oishel Oilam. So in the word Echad, you've got the indication of the four corners, that means space. We've got the indication of the realms of spiritual existence, the seven heavens and earth represented by the Ches. And all of that is predicated on Aleph, on the fact that Hashem is one. So in spite of the fact that there are all these distant, diverse and different elements of the world, they all proclaim oneness. What is the purpose of the whole of existence? To take the Ches and the Dalet, the world of diversity, and to illustrate that it is truly only Aleph. It is all just different manifestations and expressions of one Hashem. That's the goal and purpose. That the world should acknowledge in and of itself that there's one God, instead of having us impose it, or worse, Hashem impose it onto the world from the outside. As we very well know in Hebrew, the first letter of a word is, in a sense, the letter that represents everything this word is about. So in the word Echad, first you have the Aleph, which represents Hashem, and then you have a Ches and Dalet, which represents the detailed diversity of the world. The fact that the Aleph comes first is there to illustrate to us that the whole of the world is incorporated in the truth of Aleph, of Hashem's oneness. Now you should ask a question. Surely the design of the world, oilam from the word helem, the design of the world is dafka to conceal and obscure godliness. So how can a world which is designed by Hashem's design to hide Hashem, how should such a world actually become the ultimate vessel and vehicle to proclaim Hashem? It doesn't happen by nature, it doesn't happen automatically. The only way it can happen is Hashem has given us a tool set, which is Torah and Mitzvahs, presented to us at Mount Sinai, which empower us with the potential to be able to recognize within the world oneness of Hashem. It's not going to happen on its own. So can you see what's happening over here? So the giving of the Torah is Moshe's jurisdiction, will allow us to bring the world to its purpose, which is to proclaim the oneness of Hashem, which is Mashiach's jurisdiction. Shiloi Moshe to Yavoi Shiloi to the coming of Mashiach. Goyel Rishoin, who Goyel Acharon, the original Redeemer, Moshe begins the process by empowering us with what it takes to bring Goyel Acharon Mashiach.
So
at the time of the giving of the Torah, not only were we given the facilities which would allow us to make the world a place of divine revelation, but more than that, not only were we given a tool set, the Torah and Mitzvahs, but the world shifted at that point in time. There was an implanting of holiness into the world at that point, and there was an elevation of the world that happened at that point, which shifted the world on its axis, so that now it is ready to be taken through that process. At the time the Torah was given, there was such an intense revelation of godliness that the world was forever changed. Which means that from that moment and on, the world became filled with a sense of the ability to submit to Hashem. The Gemara describes that at the time of the giving of the Torah was absolute silence, not even a bird chirped at the time of the giving of the Torah. That means it completely submitted its entire natural process to what Hashem wanted. Now, at that point in time, the world was not yet ready. And so that's why the world didn't now radiate godliness. It just kind of collapsed in the face of godliness. It went silent. It switched off. It couldn't do any of its things because it was overwhelmed. For which reason, as soon as the show was over, the world reclaimed its position as being Olam Ilashon Helem, a concealment of godliness. So that's true. It wasn't a lasting impact. However, but something changed. Prior to the giving of the Torah, the world was, so to speak, absolutely just conscious of self and was incapable of submitting to Hashem. Through the experience of Matan Torah, the world shifted in a way that it would never regress, that it would never go back to absolute rejection of the possibility of Hashem. On the contrary, it became open that through our work, that bittul could eventually translate into not just falling down and collapsing when Hashem is revealed, but in fact to become the conduit and vehicle for absolute revelation of godliness. Now we can go back to what we said in the beginning. Now we can understand why I take Moshe, add the concept of Echad, not just the word. It's not a gematria game that you take Moshe plus Echad equals Mashiach. It's Moshe, the concept of Torah, plus Echad, the avoider of revealing how the world is actually one with Hashem. That brings Mashiach. It's in order for us to understand and appreciate that the giving of the Torah is the initiating of the process, which empowered us to do the avoida of Echad, to reveal within the world how the world itself should become cognizant of its expression of godliness, and that's what's going to bring Mashiach. And now we can clearly understand how Moshe Rabbeinu turns towards Hashem and says, "Shlach no biat tishlach. Mashiach, we have an indelible connection. Why don't you just send Mashiach now? Why? Because Moshe is going to facilitate the process that reveals Mashiach." And of course, Hashem's response is, "Not yet. It's got to go through the process." And the reason Hashem says not yet is because we can also understand that there's a very clear distinction between Moshe and what he achieves and Mashiach and what he will achieve. Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, of course, he redeemed the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is that Yerida. What was the purpose of that Yerida called Mitzrayim? To get to Matan Torah, as it says in this week's parasha, that Hashem told Moshe, when you take the Yidden out, they'll serve me on this mountain. The whole purpose of having been there was to get to this mountain. Golos Mitzrayim is to bring us to Matan Torah. So what is the goal of Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu's primary purpose in life? Yes, of course, it's that Hashem chooses us, which is core, because then we become a fundamentally different group of people. What is the purpose of Matan Torah? To empower us to be able to get the world to where it needs to be. Whereas in Yonah Shemashiach Ugmar Abir Vazik Chavayikar Avodah Achrezeh Kasholim Kvar Yisbar Vizdakech Vichulei, whereas Mashiach is all about what happens once that has been achieved. So Moshe still has to fight against a paroi. That's a big part of his life, indicating that Moshe represents dealing with the world when it is not yet elevated. Mashiach, on the other hand, there's no paroi in the Mashiach story. Mashiach is about the avoda that we will do once the world has been completely elevated. So Moshe starts the process, and Moshiach takes us to the next level after that process has been completed. When we complete the process of revealing the godliness that lies at the core of the world, then we are ready for Moshiach. Then Moshiach comes and takes us to a whole different level of serving Hashem, something that we cannot begin to appreciate and understand yet. So that's how it is in terms of the course of history. Moshe starts the process of history and Moshiach completes it. But all of that also refers and relates to us in our personal lives. Adam Olam Katan, as we know, the human being is considered a microcosm in Torah. The whole of the world is reflected within the human being. So we've just seen that there's a particular order of the world. Giving of the Torah, application of the Torah in the reality of the world itself, and that brings Moshiach. So that is reflected on a daily basis in our lives. We have work to do every single day, and we have to come back in the evening and, so to speak, consolidate what we've done. At the end of the whole day, we say, I deposit my neshama back with you, Hashem. And the next day, we wake up refreshed like a new creature, a new being, and we go out and we further our objective of serving Hashem. The way we start our day is davening and learning, as the Shulchan Aruch says, that after you daven, you're supposed to immediately go and learn Torah. That's what empowers us, that when we go into whatever else we're going to do in the world, eat, engage in business, socialize with people, whatever we're going to do, we'll be empowered to do it appropriately. Through the process of davening, we allow our neshama to spread throughout our whole body. At the beginning of the day, it says, you know, at the beginning of the day, the nefesh lekis, so to speak, is neshama be'apoy. The person's neshama is only, so to speak, in the vital organs. And the purpose of davening is to get the nefesh lekis to have a positive influence over the entire body. And then we learn Torah, which empowers us. We're told that Torah is a vaccination against the Yetzer Hara. And we're told that Torah is a guidebook on how we're supposed to behave in the world. Then, once we've empowered ourselves with davening and with Torah learning, then we have the power to go out and do the so-called ordinary mundane activities of the world, which now we will no longer do as an ordinary citizen, we'll do as an empowered citizen who's got the force of Torah and davening behind us. Like the Rambam famously says, that a person who is a wise person, meaning a person who has the wisdom of Torah to guide them, should be recognized the minute you see them. The way they eat, the way they drink, the way they dress, the way they walk, everything about them screams the fact that this is a holy person. It should be clear, as Shlomo HaMelech says, that everything that we do, people from the outside can identify that we're doing it with the foresight and the insight of the wisdom of Torah. As Shlomo HaMelech also says, that one individual who has wisdom can save an entire city. So we save our world, so to speak. Through the chokhmah, the wisdom that we have learned in Torah, we have that alufay shel olam, that absolute acute awareness of the oneness of Hashem that seeps into the ches and the dalad, the diversity of the world that we live in. In other words, just like Moshe Rabbeinu empowered the Jewish people through Matan Torah, that we could bring oneness of Hashem into the world and thereby bring Moshiach, every single day we empower ourselves through davening and through Torah to be able to bring the oneness of Hashem into every single thing that we do. Then at the end of the day, when a person is supposed to reflect honestly on how well they did in terms of serving Hashem through the course of the day. Once again, at the end of the day, we reinforce for ourselves that our entire purpose is to bring the oneness of Hashem into the world. By saying at the end of the day, I hereby deposit my neshama back with you, Hashem, the God of Emes. What's Emes? The idea of Emes, truth, is identical to the idea of Echad, oneness. As the expression goes, that Hashem's Emes, truth, is to come into this world, to be recognized in this world. Or as the Talmud Yerushalmi says, that Hashem's signature is Emes, is truth. In other words, the thing that represents Hashem absolutely is truth. What does that mean? If he should gimel oisias aleph mem tov, you know aleph rishona shabo oisias, or mem emtza yisun of sof achrona shabo oisias, kamoisha kos vani rishon vani achronim yibalodai en elikim. So what does emes represent from the beginning, the highest level, right through the middle, represented by the letter mem, to the final letter tov, which represents the lowest of the low, that Hashem is the beginning and end and truth right throughout. Which means that our goal and purpose in the world is to bring the honesty, the truth of godliness into every single part of existence, from the highest to the lowest. That Hashem is the master of the universe. That, as the Rambam says, it's from Hashem's truth that every other thing comes to exist. As is, it's quite well known, actually, even though it's from an obscure source, obscure, it's the Marashah, but the concept is you take the word MS and you remove the Aleph, which represents the oneness of Hashem, and what do you have? God forbid, the opposite of life. What is Judaism all about? Empower ourselves with davening and with Torah, to be able to bring into the world that we live in, the things we engage with, absolute consciousness that there's nothing else besides Hashem, and that is the truth of the whole world. That is bringing Mashiach. So just as it is in the time scale of the whole of existence, that Torah empowers us to change the world, to become an expression of godliness which brings Mashiach, likewise we, through our Torah learning, empower our little piece of the world to be an expression of godliness, and through that, by doing that, we bring Mashiach not just to our personal lives, but to the world scale, to the world stage. And in Mitzvah Hashem, that should happen immediately.